Welcome to The Common Share, a podcast about cooperative businesses. I'm Asa Marshall with Cooperatives First, an organization that promotes co-op business development in rural and Indigenous communities across Western Canada. We're recording in Saskatoon on Treaty 6 territory and the traditional homeland of the Métis. After 6 years of leading the Good Governance Matters course, our Director of Education, Kyle White, has heard a lot from co-op leaders. The course allows him not only to teach people about governance, but to have conversations about the issues they face day to day. For this episode, Kyle and I sat down to talk about the themes and lessons that have emerged from the conversations had in the governance course. As our in-house governance expert, Kyle has insights that can help any co-op board, big or small, and he gives a glimpse into the debates being had around board tables of cooperatives of all kinds. So you recently completed the sixth cohort of the Good Governance Matters course, which over the years, over 2,000 co-op leaders have taken to learn the nuances of governance. Governance is clearly one of our favorite topics around here, but it's always important and always something we want to be talking about and updating. So you've had the chance to talk to a lot of co-op leaders through teaching this course. And so we want to tap into some of the learnings you've had because you've been able to hear so much from a lot of these people from across the sector. So first, can you talk a little bit about who has taken this course in the past, especially since you started doing cohorts? What kind of co-ops have they worked for and what roles do they tend to play?
So the people we see coming through the governance course are primarily board members, managers, and senior staff members of the co-ops and credit unions that people are going to be very familiar with. Your local co-op associations, Federated Cooperatives Limited, and some of the big credit unions across Canada. Service Credit Union, Van City, Affinity, Connexus, to name a few. We've also had lots from Eastern Canada and Ontario. We've also had folks from the United Farmers of Alberta, the Bee Made Cooperative, really prominent co-ops in their fields. And in terms of the folks then who've done the online-only course at their own pace, we've had folks from all walks of co-op life, from big and small co-ops across Canada. We've had folks from the States and internationally work through that course as well.
Amazing. So you've been teaching people a lot about governance, but as I mentioned, you've also been hearing a lot from these people who are involved in very prominent cooperatives. What are some of the themes you've heard from these co-op leaders while you've been teaching the course?
Great question. The course really gets at foundational ideas in governance. Things like, what are the roles people need to fulfill in governance? How people make decisions, how people work together, and how we coordinate and cooperate within an organization. But within that, partially because of the unique way cooperatives operate, the last few times I've led this course, we see these themes coming up that are fairly hotly debated, I would say, in the co-op governance community. Not that that's a huge community. Some of the big ones that come to mind are, you know, the debate between diversity and representation and the qualifications of being on a board of directors. This is hotly debated, probably not just in the co-op community, but in nonprofits and corporations and different governments are doing all sorts of different things to ensure that boards of corporations and companies look like the populations of their communities. And there's pros and cons to doing that. Some of the things we always hear from folks who are skeptical of that is, you know, we need to make sure people are qualified, though, to be on the board. We need to make sure people are, you know, they have the education, the skills, the experience, and not just focusing on the diversity. And then you have people like Simon Peck, who's been on our podcast a few times, who stands by the idea that diversity always trumps ability, and that more diverse boards will always make better decisions than more capable boards. So that's definitely a theme that comes up quite a bit. Another key one that a lot of co-ops are struggling with at the moment is director selection. How difficult or restrictive should it be to join a board of directors? most co-ops in Western Canada have some minimum criteria. Some of our retail co-ops, for example, have spending requirements. You need to actually shop at the co-op that you want to serve on the board of. But others are up in the ante a little bit. MEC famously did this back in 2013, when you had to have, I think, executive experience in a company to join their board. Whenever you try to introduce something like that, inevitably there's some pushback. So it's quite interesting to see that debate unfold and how open should you make the elections for a co-op's board. It's a really debated question. And the other theme that we always gravitate towards is the role for members and staff in the cooperative's governance. The governance literature and most courses and training on governance tends to focus on the board of directors and management, specifically the relationship between those two. But in a co-op, you're really missing out on a whole segment of the governance discussion by not talking about the members, who are the owners, of course, of the business. And this is a general statement, but most co-ops don't do a fantastic job of engaging their membership in the governance of their co-op. It's often a once-a-year thing at the annual meeting where you have to engage the members, and you're probably missing out by not engaging them more. Members are often the most valuable assets of their co-ops, and when you can use them effectively, you can really catalyze some cool things. Similarly with staff. Staff are often the frontline people engaging with your members on a day-to-day basis, including them in governance conversations and helping learn from your staff is a really great way for getting key insights for your co-op on governance, on operations, on a whole bunch of things.
It's interesting to hear that these are sort of not controversial, but contested, you know, ideas that you get people falling on both sides of them. Why do you think there's so much debate around these, you know, particular topics? Maybe starting with the diversity versus experience or expertise, maybe one. How does that play out?
Well, I think the reason it's contentious is because in some cases it will work, and in other cases it does not.
Yeah. and if we look at most things,
yeah, and if we look at the MEC board specifically, that's an example of a board that was highly curated. The people around that table were probably some of the most qualified people to sit around a board table in all of Canada's co-ops, and I assume most people are aware that co-op failed in a few years ago, in 2021. So despite having the best possible people around the table, it didn't save them from what befell the co-op. And in terms of increasing diversity, there's a number of reasons why people might feel some kind of way about that. But most co-ops in Canada elect people by a popular vote. There's no guarantee you're going to get the best people using that system either. And studies show that more diverse boards will make better decisions because of a principle called super additivity. A diverse group of people, both in terms of ethnicity, culture, and lived experience, tend to make better decisions. That pushes back on what's kind of naturally evolved for most boards, especially those in North America, that are largely dominated by men, and more specifically, older white men. That's changing. Reports that come out on board diversity representation does indicate that women, visible minorities, have a much larger proportion of director seats, but it's still dominated by older white men. So you're really pushing back on norms with that. And some people might feel threatened by that, especially if they're told, you know, we need to figure out how to up the number of women on our board, the number of youth on our board, the number of visible minorities on our board. A lot of co-ops might stress about how do we actually do that? Our election process is a popular vote. To which I say to them, figure it out. You know,
there are ways.
You shoulder tap. You encourage certain candidates and not others. You put a nominations process in place that cultivates it. These are some of the steps that you can realistically take, but they're steps you have to take. Yeah. And yeah, they're different and challenging, but it takes time. Mm-hmm. There has to be some sort of intentionality to that.
Yeah.
And that's a bit daunting for folks, especially if, you know, this is the way we've always been doing it. We think good results. Why do we need to change? So it's an ongoing debate. And I continuously pose that, you know, that statement to folks that diversity trumps ability. It's always interesting to see how folks react to that.
Yeah. Do you see any minds changing in the course of the like delivering the material, or do you think people are pretty stuck in their ways?
I think people who are maybe stuck in their ways say that they want to have both.
Ah.
We want diversity, but we want to make sure that they're qualified.
Of course.
The challenge to that is just train them. Mm-hmm. You know, once directors are in place, you can offer training on cooperatives, on governance, on board features, or on the specific industry that your co-op is operating in. That kind of goes without question. Mm-hmm. It's cultivating that diversity that's really challenging. Mm-hmm. In the co-op's governance course, we look at different case studies. Mm. And most of the case studies we look at, the boards of those cooperatives, with the exception of MEC, tend to be white men. Mm-hmm. And not to say that that's the reason that the co-ops faced issues, but scholars who assess these do think that a bit of groupthink was happening. There was perspective that was being missed out on. Again, not to say having a more diverse board would automatically fix that. Mm-hmm. But it does put you in a better place under better conditions to make better decisions. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at, again, the MEC board, which I don't want to comment on their diversity, but was as qualified as possible, qualifications didn't save the co-op. Mm-hmm. So how skilled and experienced someone is only gets you so far. Yeah, having a balance of two is good. But again, I would focus on cultivating that diversity and then training people once they're in place.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. What about the sort of debate around director selection? Where do people fall on when they kind of argue that one out?
It's an interesting thing because the course and the cohorts that we lead in particular are primarily made up of directors and managers from larger co-ops. Many of Canada's large co-ops, certainly in the credit union space, have moved towards a delegate model where the membership elect delegates, usually to represent their geographic region. And then those delegates, which are a very small portion of the members, will go on to elect the board. Usually that's a good way of ensuring more qualified candidates. Mm-hmm. It's an easier way of cultivating diversity on the board because, again, your pool has decreased from, say, 500,000 to 200 mm-hmm. members. So it's a bit easier to manage that sort of thing. And both in the course and in real time, we're seeing different co-ops question that model even because they think it pushes back on what makes a co-op a co-op. Mm-hmm. You're excluding the membership from a fundamental choice that they've traditionally been able to make. Here in town, Affinity Credit Union recently went back to a model where the membership elects their directors rather than the membership electing delegates. Very interesting to see that. Mm-hmm. And certainly when MEC most famously brought in its very restrictive process, I think one of the founding members of MEC was no longer qualified to sit on their board of directors. Right. The backlash to that was enormous. Mm-hmm. It still passed, mm-hmm. a membership vote, of course, but very contentious. I think there is unanimity on this issue that most folks believe there has to be some threshold for serving on the board of a co-op. But more and more folks are feeling that the actual election process and nominations process should err towards being more open than more restrictive, mm-hmm. Which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the third debate around members, especially, and staff of co-ops is key because, as you mentioned, members are the owners of co-ops. So what kind of debate are people having, or co-op leaders having, around how to engage those demographics?
Again, this is a really interesting debate because no one's figured out it well. I would argue producer-owned cooperatives and worker-owned cooperatives tend to be easier to put member engagement strategies in place because their memberships are smaller in size, and the relationship the member has with the co-op is more intimate, I guess you could say, because their livelihood is partially attached to it. For our consumer-owned co-ops, including the retail co-ops and credit unions, it's far more difficult because, one, you've got many more members. I think Saskatoon Co-op is up over 170,000 members at the moment. I think Calgary Co-op is over 400,000. Those are some big AGMs, for example. So there's no really great way of engaging those members. So boards really need to spend time figuring out what do we need from the membership. And we try to boil that down to, there's really two ways to engage your membership. One is financially, so that they're using the cooperative and supporting its work. The second is organizationally, or through a governance perspective. And it's really hard to pin down what that looks like. Because in most cases, when times are good and things aren't, things are working the way that they should, we don't worry too much about engaging members. It's really only when there's a crisis, a problem, or the co-op is threatened, that the role of members gets elevated. And we see this in case studies with Maple Creek Co-op, is one that we've written about in the past, where the co-op really has nowhere else to turn other than to its owners, who need to keep that business alive. So I think boards should keep the worst in mind when they're planning for how to engage members at the best of times. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but... It's one of those things that it is hard, but not engaging your members will probably lead to worse outcomes down the road. So some of the advice we talk about in the course is, how do you engage your members? A lot of the folks who've been through will engage in membership surveys. They'll do things like town hall meetings. The best way of understanding how members want to be engaged is to just ask them. And so more and more co-ops are thinking about that. They're gradually doing it. But it is both a challenging process and it's expensive. So I understand fully why the debate is there, but you don't want to miss out on an opportunity or a safeguard that's readily available to your co-op anytime.
And it's interesting because you've got such experienced people in the cohort who are involved in such big established co-ops. Do you find that they're kind of sharing their best practices with each other? Like, or were you learning sort of from what they've done on the ground?
Most definitely. In the course, we try to encourage folks to share freely. For that reason, we don't record things. We don't, you know, discuss too much of the specifics broadly. And folks do share good practices. Or things that they've tried, or discussions they've had around their board tables. And those conversations continue elsewhere. I mean, for example, Federated Cooperatives Limited is owned by 160-plus local co-op associations. All of them are sharing information to some degree. And they're working together to work with Federated to get good data, to connect with members, connect with staff, provide training that's needed. So that sort of work is definitely happening in a shared. In the credit union space, it's similar, but a little bit different. There are, of course, national credit union associations, and credit unions have been working together more and more. But they're in an industry that is, one, far more regulated and far more complicated just from a governance and operations perspective, that their plates are so full. I understand, again, why member engagement's not at the forefront. But some of those efforts are still happening, but it is challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. During the course, what topics do you find participants gravitate towards? I think this last cohort you did, you found that maybe they were a little more interested in some topics that mm-hmm. previous ones hadn't been, and so on.
That was actually a big surprise this time around. In the course, I always kind of joke that there's parts of the course that are quite easy to move through because mm-hmm. we're fairly familiar with it if we're practicing governance. And there are other parts of the course that will make us take pause, question what we're doing, and it can be a little bit dense to read. Because mm-hmm. the course does draw on, you know, social psychology, behavioral economics, and a little bit of philosophy mm-hmm. To really round out the conversations. But this most recent cohort really delved into the section on decision making and how cognition and bias shapes how organizations and the individuals that make up those organizations conceive of information, process information, and use that to actualize policy for the co-op. We had such a fantastic discussion on that section, which is module 5 in the course, for those who are interested. Had such a great discussion about our own biases and how we interpret information and process it. And then we applied some of those concepts to a case study of the Saskatchewan wheat pool, which, again, many scholars say suffered from agency problems, as well as some rubber stamping, partially because of groupthink. So it was so fantastic to see, you know, these theoretical discussions talked about and then applied, and then other groups realizing where they might be at risk for slipping into some of those same issues. Or, equally as interesting, to hear how folks are guarding against those sorts of things. And again, how to address bias is something that should be top of mind for most boards, because decision-making is fundamental to our jobs. When to seek external opinion, ensuring that there's someone who's maybe being a devil's advocate on your board. These are all simple things we can do to ensure we're making the best decisions and not succumbing to bias and opening ourselves up to risks.
So again, like being able to sit and have a lot of good conversations with these co-op leaders, what are some of the biggest challenges and concerns you've heard from these people who are governing cooperatives?
It's a good question. And it's always surprising because in our work, we work both with big co-ops through courses like this one, but we also work with small co-ops that are just starting up in our support side of things. Mm-hmm. And it's always surprising how similar the challenges often are.
Oh, really?
And again, things like how do we engage our membership? How do we talk about ourselves so that people understand how our business works, what their role is in it, and how we're offering support? Big co-ops and small co-ops struggle with that all the time. Another ongoing challenge we see for folks is how effective boards are. It's interesting to hear some of the interplay between managers and directors in the risks of board governance. Because again, we've elected folks based on a popular election. In some cases, boards will have agendas and other goals, whereas staff are primarily focused on making the business as successful as possible. What happens when those things are at odds? Or if you've got particularly contentious discussions happening around your board table, what risks then does that open the co-op up to? Very contentious. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's been labor disputes or, pushback from different interest groups around some of these co-ops. Again, most co-ops allow popular elections on their boards. With that comes some risk. So folks are always looking for how do we address that? How do we ensure that once people are on the board, they're participating as fully as they should be and really helping the business be successful? And that's true both of big co-ops, but also the small ones that we help start. And all co-ops, I would say, share a common concern, which is how do we compete with the, you know, large oligopolies mm-hmm. that dominate the industries most co-ops operate in. Mm-hmm. So if we think about credit unions, they're competing with essentially four gigantic players. And if we think about our grocery co-ops, they're competing with four huge players who are largely exporting profits out of our communities, mm-hmm. out east, down south, not staying in the communities, whereas co-ops are locally owned, invested in community. Inherently, the model presents a more fair way of doing business, but it's at risk when it goes head-to-head with competitors with deeper pockets. So how do we effectively set our organizations up so that they can better compete, better retain membership, and expand people's appreciation for how co-ops work? That's an ongoing conversation that I think all co-ops share in. And another thing people worry about or think towards is the question of scale. Mm-hmm. We're certainly seeing this with retail co-ops and credit unions, where many of them are recognizing you kind of need to be a certain size to effectively compete. We're seeing lots of mergers and amalgamations within the cooperative retailing system and amongst credit unions to more effectively scale up operations and serve the needs of members. I think that trend's going to continue quite a bit, but of course it does present its own challenges as members perceive a loss of local autonomy. We've kind of removed decision-making from, you know, our smaller community to perhaps a bigger center. There are risks that come with it, and it needs to be managed with effective member engagement. So again, those are challenges that all co-ops, I think, recognize and share, but they're necessary conversations that are kind of unavoidable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what should co-op leaders keep in mind when it comes to governance?
So I would recommend this course to everybody because it puts right in front of you the big challenges inherent with co-op governance and governance generally. So I think whenever I sit on a board, and I encourage folks to do this, just take a second and think, are we slipping into one of those challenges with how we're making these decisions or how we're doing these things? Because again, you can easily avoid some of the big challenges of governance by just taking a minute, thinking about it, and discussing it a little bit further. Rubber stamp boards, for example, don't ever set out planning to be a rubber stamp board.
Yeah.
They only succumb to that when, you know, they're not asking the questions or they're trusting management, not too much, but they're not, you know, seeking other information. No group sets out to suffer from groupthink, but if we're too similar in our thinking and our perspective and we're not asking the right questions or seeking external information, it's easy for us all to be on the same page to our detriment. Okay. So again, some simple ways of doing that are at each meeting, I like to do this in some of my own work, is ensure someone's appointed as the devil's advocate for the meeting.
Interesting.
It's always fun. Just appoint someone to be that meeting's contrarian. Someone who will push back. Because mm-hmm. If you have someone who's challenging you actively in a meeting, you're probably going to better articulate why you should be doing something mm-hmm. than if someone's just acquiescing. And you're going to face those challenges anyway, from your membership or from customers or what have you. Why not tease that out and ensure that you've got the best arguments in place and the best decision in place by having someone address it up front?
That's a great idea.
And a lot of this, of course, can fall to a board chair. We have a fun blog on how to be a kick-ass board chair. Dr. Marc-André Pigeon at the Center, Canadian Center for the City of Cooperatives, has a great article on being a board chair. A good board chair can really make a big difference for co-ops, because that person's job is not necessarily to focus solely on the decisions of the board, but the governance and how the board itself functions. So that person's really well positioned to identify, maybe we should be trying this other tactic to ensure we're making the best possible decisions. Another one of the easy things you can do is seek external info. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a diverse board, that's fine. Reach out to people. There are tons of consultants out there who can weigh in and give an external perspective to whatever it is your co-op's working on. And that brings a new perspective to the table. It maybe asks some questions you hadn't been considering. And it just adds to the information that you can consider to ensure you're making that good decision.
And so why do you think it's important for people to either learn these things, or even if they've been in governance a long time, to refresh their knowledge about the ins and outs in governance? I mean, what can go wrong when people aren't fully up to speed and fully aware of what their role should be?
It's a good question. And I'm always encouraged whenever we set up one of these cohorts, because we have a pretty good diversity of age around the table here. Don't get me wrong, I'm often always the youngest person, but we are seeing more and more younger people around there, and we certainly see a lot of older people, which is also super encouraging because it does indicate that people are always looking for new learning opportunities, even if it is on something like good governance, which presumably you've received training on before. What I've found is it never hurts to reread old information, because whatever place you're in your life or in or the organization or your role, you're probably going to bring that new current knowledge to the table, and that information is going to hit a little differently. Even myself, whenever I reread the sections on decision making or coordination, I always bring my current state of mind to that, and I think, oh wow, yeah, this is really applicable for this thing that I'm working on with this client or on this board. So it's always helpful to check back in with the basics, because there's probably something you're going to take away for whatever you're currently working on.
Yeah.
And with this course in particular, we kind of take probably two steps back from what most traditional co-op governance courses would focus on. And we really get at the basics of what feeds into board governance. And that's not something most organizations will dig into. Mm-hmm. I think to find something comparable, you'd have to probably look towards decision-making and economics courses in universities to kind of cover the same sort of information. So the approach is very unique, very foundational, and I would think that gives folks, I think, a better insight into how some of these other processes work. Like when we're talking about making motions and decisions at the board, well, take two steps back. What actually feeds into that to get us to the output and outcome that we want? So for all those reasons, I think folks should be constantly learning, even if it is just checking back in to make sure we're, you know, both up to date on relevant ideas, because certainly when it comes to diversity, we weren't having the same conversation 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly wasn't. I was in junior high. But it never hurts to check back in to bring old and new ideas to whatever you're currently working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent suggestion. Mm-hmm. So how can people learn more? I mean, we talked about this course, obviously. Who is this course for, and where else can people be looking for this kind of information? Mm-hmm.
So the course is currently, it's on our website. Folks can access it for free. You can work through the course at the moment at your own pace. Once a year, usually we'll do an outreach call for a cohort where we have 50 or 60 folks work through the course with an instructor. But it's always available to work through at your own pace, and it's totally free. Anyone who's involved with co-ops or even nonprofits, charities, and companies could certainly work through this course and get some value. Anyone who's in a decision-making role would, I think, get some value out of this course. you tinker around on our site for a little bit more, there are tons of resources on governance, including on the Co-op Creator, mm-hmm. which is our resource website that has lots of practical tools and suggestions and templates for groups that are working through governance challenges, but also on our blog and podcast. We talk about lots of different ideas, certainly our conversations with Dr. Simon Peck out of UVic. Mm-hmm. He's got some great suggestions on reimagining how you engage membership and how you carry out things like elections. Mm-hmm. So there's tons of resources there. I would also strongly recommend folks check out the Canadian Center for the Study of Cooperatives. Doctors Jen Budney and Marc-André Pigeon and Dion Poehler have some really great resources. Focus on co-op and credit union governance and how that, and explore a whole bunch of different things like diversity, chairing boards, mergers amongst credit unions. There's just so many fantastic resources there, and they're all free, freely mm-hmm. available.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for this, Kyle. It was really great to hear what you've taken away from all of these years working with people on the Good Governance Matters course. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, it as both a supporter of co-op governance and a practitioner, we always need to keep learning because, again, the work that co-ops do is very valuable. Mm-hmm. We need to ensure that we're in the best possible position to continue that work. And governance is foundational to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for another great conversation about governance. I'm sure we'll do more. But yeah, that's it for today.
Thank you for joining us. For more on us and what we do, visit cooperativesfirst.com. If you need resources for starting your own co-op, check out coopcreator.com. It's a great resource site that has everything you need to get a co-op up and running. To give us your thoughts on anything we discussed in this episode, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or on Twitter as coops_first.